Today's daf is Kuf Chaf Gimel, and we start with the sheet of Rabbah. Rabbah holds that a kli shemalachta le'isur, a utensil that's generally used for something that's osur on Shabbos, you're allowed to move it, you're allowed to use it litzorech gufo. And that's on the top here of daf Kuf Chaf Gimel Amid Aleph. Dover shemalachta le'isur, litzorech gufo mutter. So, for example, we have in our Mishnah a case of a hammer that's used by a carpenter, and that's a classic kli shemalachta le'isur, and you're allowed to use it to crack your nuts. That's called litzorech gufo. Eisvei Abai l'Rabba. Abai quotes a brisa that seems to contradict Rabba. Midocha. Midocha is a very large utensil that's used to grind up garlic. And grinding is a melacha of tchina. And therefore this kli is designated for isur. So the brisa says the following. Im yesh ba shum metaltenosa. If there's still some garlic in the grinder, in other words, the grinder had a double function. It was used for grinding, and it was used as a receptacle. In other words, after you finished your grinding, then sometimes you would leave the shum, the garlic, inside the kli until later on you'd clean it out, you'd take it out. And that's called a kli that's being used for heter. In other words, on Erev Shabbos, as you entered into Shabbos, you had garlic in this, chopped up garlic in this chopper, and therefore it's mutvim lav. But if there's no garlic, then ein metaltenosa. And ein metaltenosa means under no circumstance are we going to allow you to move this gigantic grinder, because it's a kli shemalachta le'isur. What about litzorech gufo? According to you, Rabbah, the brisa should have qualified and said, but if you want to use it for some other purpose, let's say you want to use it as a weight, you know, to weigh down your papers so that the breeze will not blow away your papers, then it should be mutter. But the absolute statement that osur, ein metaltun osur, would seem to clearly indicate that under no circumstance you're allowed tiltil, which means that a kli shemalachta le'isur is osur l'taltil afilu l'tzorech gufo. Omalei, so Rabbah responds, Homani, the author of this price is Rabbi Nechemyah. He diomar, who's Rabbi Nechemyah? What is his shita? And by the way, this Nechemyah has nothing to do with the Nechemyah who came on Aliyah to Bavel with Ezra and wrote Sefer Nechemyah. We'll have a lot to talk about later on about that Nechemyah. But now we're talking about one of the Tanoim, by the name of Rabbi Nechemyah. And he holds Ein Kli Nitel El Litzorech Tashmisho, that every utensil has its own designated purpose, and you're not allowed to move it for any other purpose whatsoever. But we paskin, we accept the Chachamim Shita, that you can have a kli, and even if it has one single purpose, you can use it for multiple purposes. And according to our psak, says Rabbah, we would allow moving a kli shemalachta le'isur litzorech gufo, even though the tzor gufo in this case is not the tashmish hamiyuchad lo, it's not the purpose that was designated for, singled out for, but nevertheless, that's mutter. Eisvei, another question that Abai asks on Rabbah, this one from a Mishnah in Masechta Beitza, and the Mishnah records a machlokes between Beit Shammai and Beis Hillel. And what's the machlokes about? The machlokes is about a certain utensil. Now, you know, the parak that we're learning is kol hakelim, and it has to do with utensils. Now, a lot of the utensils have very specific names, both in Kodesh and also in translation. So, you know, very often I'll just give you the English translation for the words, and, you know, you'll have to research exactly what they are. Anyway, Beit Shammai says, a notlin es ha'eli lekatzev olav basar. So the eli is a wooden kli, which is used to help crush in this case, grains, but it's called a pestle in English. And you want to use it in order to chop meat on it. Apparently it had a certain flat surface to it, this pestle. And he wants to use it, so to speak, as a plate. So it's a klisha malachto le'isur. Now the case that we're dealing with here is this omission beitza is yontif. And we'll see why yontif is relevant to us. According to Beit Shammai, you're not allowed to take this pestle, this eli, and use it as a plate, you know, to chop up your meat. And Beisil matirin. Beisil allow it. Vishavin, they all agree that im kitzev olav basar, if he's already chopped up his meat, sha'asal etaltalo. Afterwards, you're not allowed to move this kli, this eli. And it would seem, once again, that we have a case of a kli shemalachto le'isur, this eli, and the only reason Beis Hillel allows it on yontif is because of something called litzorech yontif. There are a lot of malachas that you're allowed to do for the purpose of okol nefesh on yontif, simchas yontif. But once he already used it, then he can't move it. He can't move it, apparently, for any purpose. Why not? According to you, Rabbah, you should be allowed to move it with tzarch gufo. You want to use it as a table or something. So the original thought of Rabbah is, once again, to assume that that b'raisa reflects the shita of Rabbi Nechemya. And Rabbi Nechemya says that it's got to be a tashmish hamiyuchad lo. You're not allowed to move a kli for any other purpose than its singular purpose. Came into Shamile Lahud Rab Chanina, Dar Rab Chinina, Bar Shlemia, Mishmei de Rav. But once he heard a statement in the name of Rav, he could avoid having to interpret that Mishnah in Beitza in the light of Rab Nechemya. And it could reflect even the sheet of Chachamim. And why is that? Hakol moda besiche izyare umizore de came in the cup of Elayim yachid le'moko. So this statement of Rav has to do with a special category of mukta, which even the Chachamim agree is mukta, which cannot be used even with tzarech gufo. So when you have a klishim lachto le'isur, according to Rabbah, you're allowed to move it l'tzarech gufo. But when you have something that's mukta, then you're not allowed to move it l'tzarech gufo. Now here are three kinds of kelim that are used in the context of weaving and embroidering. Spindles, clothes presses, mallets. And these are very sensitive kelim. And we don't want to use them unless we use them in their function. And therefore, miyachid le'makom. He locks them up in a certain place. He stores them. He doesn't want anyone touching them. And in such a case, even the Chachamim would agree that you cannot use this and be metaltel it on Shabbos. Haninami, and let's apply the same thing to this case of Eli, that keli, the pestle that's used for crushing grains, miyachid le'makom, he sets up a special place, locks it up, and once again, it's a sensitive kli, and therefore, once he designates a place for it, then that's a very extreme kind of case of mukta, and you have these sensitive utensils which are used in a certain context, and then they are locked up when they're not used. And that's something that even according to the Rabbanan is osur betiltul. It's not like a regular kli, which can be multifunctional. Nobody locks it up. It's a kli shemalachto le'isur, but you're allowed to move it litzarech gufo, according to Rabbah. Now, we have the case of a hammer, and we had a machlokes between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbah, whether you're allowed to use the hammer, which is normally used by a carpenter, for the purpose of cracking nuts. Rav Yehuda says it's asur, because he holds that a kli shemalachto li'isur is also l'taltol l'tzorach gufo. Rabba allows it. He holds that a kli shemalachto li'isur is mutol l'taltol l'tzorach gufo. And now the Gemara brings a discussion that's relevant to this machlokas. Itmar, we learned in the Beis Medrash, Rabbi Chiya bar Abba Omar, Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Chiya says in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, Kurnos shel Zahavim. Zahavim is the name of a certain profession, and these are the those who smooth out the gold, and they had a certain specific type of a utensil, a hammer, which they used by the goldsmiths to soften out the gold. Okay, then, and Shaninu, we learned in the Mishnah that you're allowed to take this hammer of a goldsmith and use it to crack nuts, even though normally the goldsmith would put away this hammer and he wanted to make sure it remained sharp without any nicks and so forth and so on, because he would have to flatten out gold with it. And yet it's not muktzah, and therefore you can use it to crack your nuts. That's the statement in the name of Rabbi Yochanan. Rav Shemen bar Abba Omar, Kurnos shel besamim shaninu. That means that even in the case of a spice maker's hammer that's used to chop up spice, even that, although a spice maker would be very careful, he would not want to, you know, his hammer to get used and lose its sharpness. And not only that, if it gets used with the context of something that might be a little bit repugnant, and then to use it now for besamim spices have to have a very specific fragrance and so forth. But nevertheless, if you want to use these kinds of hammers for the purpose of cracking your nuts, then it's mutter. Now the Gemara analyzes these two cases, the goldsmith hammer and the spice maker's hammer. Man diomer, according to Rav Shemen, who says that the Mishnah allows you to use this hammer to crack nuts, to besamim, even in a case of the sensitive hammer used to prepare the spices, kolshken, how much more so in the case there's a hovim of a goldsmith's hammer? Certainly there's less kpeda, they're less makpid, because you can always easily fix it and sharpen it up, and therefore certainly that would be mutter to use as a nutcracker. But man diomer, according to Rabbi Yochanan, who said shel zahavim, that the Mishnah allowed you to use the hammer of a goldsmith, which is relatively easy to fix, and is less of a kepeda, and he could use it to crack his nuts, amal besamim, no. Rabbi Yochanan would say a hammer of a spice maker could not be used to crack nuts, kapet alayu, because once again, they would lock it up and make sure that nobody would use it, because in the case of spices, it could get ruined, and it could ruin the spices. Now the Mishnah goes and discusses different kinds of utensils that are used in the context of weaving, like, for example, eshakush v'eshakarkar. And these are very sharp utensils, spindles, weaver's reeds, and he wants to use it now to spear through his food, his fruit. Tana Rabbanan, we learned a brisa. Now the subject of this brisa is tiltal, but in a very unusual kind of tiltal, where you don't move something directly, but rather indirectly. So they used to take different kinds of fruits and other food stuff, and when it wasn't completely matured, what they would do is they would submerge it into another substance, which was mukta. That substance is usually straw, and that would speed up the process of ripening. Now the question is, if on Shabbos he wants to get this fruit out, which is now covered or at least partially covered by straw, he's going to inevitably move the straw. But he's actually picking up the fruit, and that moves the straw. So that's an indirect kind of movement. Tana Rabbana, we learned in a Braisa, Paga, which is an unripe fig, Shetmana, he submerged it into Tevin, into straw. Another case is Harara, which is a kind of a cookie that they would bake, or they would roast over the open coals. And Tmana Begcholim, and he would submerge it into coals. The coals are mukta. So we have two cases where you have food that's submerged in either straw in the first case of a fig, or in coals in the second case of the cookie. And both of these substances, straw and coals, are mukta. Can you somehow access your food on Shabbos? So the answer is, says the Raisa, im magula miktsasa, if part of the fruit is rising above the teven or the gecholim in such a way that he can simply pick up the fruit, then mutar letaltala. He's allowed to move it. And this is not considered tiltul min atzad, because in this case, since it's above the level of the straw, it's just sort of like sitting on the straw, and he's just lifting it up. But v'im lav, let's say, for example, the fig or the cookie is totally submerged. In that case, the Tanakhama of this Braisa says, also l'taltala. You're not allowed to move it, because in this case, if you dig in to remove this fruit, you're going to inevitably be moving the mukta. Rabbi Elezer ben Tadai Omer, he has an option, and he says, tochavim bekush o bekarkar. You could use these spindles or reeds and pierce through the fruit. Vehem minuaros me'alehem, and the teven, the straw or the gecholim, will move by themselves. In other words, once you vacate the spot, you have a cavity, and now the straw or the gecholim will fill in the cavity. But that's mutter. Why? Because that's called tiltul min hatzad. That's indirect tiltul. You are piercing the fruit, removing the fruit, and the tiltul happens automatically. Amar Rav Nachman, halacha k'Rav Elazar ben Tadai, which means that this kind of a tiltul min atzad, where he removes something that's not mukta, and the mukta part, well, I shouldn't call it mukta, but anyway, that part, yeah, in this case, actually, it's mukta, that part moves, that's not called tiltul. So Gemara says, l'meima, should we say the summer of Nachman, the tiltul min atzad, lo shmei tiltul? The Rav Nachman holds that this is not called the tiltul. V'amar Rav Nachman made another statement with regard to a radish. The radish was detached, it's called a pulgla, and he put it into the karka, he submerged it into the ground, and part of it is exposed above the ground level. And milamal lamata shari, if he is moving it, what's called milamala lamata, in other words, it's lying right side up, and he can grasp the exposed part, lift it from the ground, but mimata lamala also. If, on the other hand, it's lying upside down, like the triangle, you know, the spitz of the triangle of this radish is down below the ground, then also, he's not allowed to lift it. So we see that Rav Nachman holds that it's also to move it, because once he lifts it up, the ground, the karka, is going to move, and that's called tiltul min atzad. So how can he paskin like Rav Elazar ben Tadai, who's matir tiltul min atzad, when he himself is committed, in the case of pugla, to the position that tiltul min atzad, shmei tiltul, and it's asur, hadar bei Rav Nachman me'ahi. Rav Nachman changed his mind, and although in the case of Tznon, of the radish, he said that Mirmata Lamala is Asur, he rescinded that position, he paskin like Rabbi Elazar ben Tadoi, and it doesn't matter which direction the radish is facing, whether it's right side up or whether it's upside down. In both cases, you're allowed to move the radish and the ground will move, and that's called tilt from an atzad, and we passing like Rabbi Elazar ben Tadoi. Machat shal yad litol boas hakotz. You're allowed to take a needle, a sewing needle, in order to use it to remove a splinter. Sholach le Rava brei derabel Rav Yosef. So Rava sends the following question to Rav Yosef. Yalam deinu Rabbeinu, please teach us. Machat shenital charora o ukta. Right, there are two ends to a needle, and on one end there is an eye, the eye of the needle, and on the other end there is ukta. Ukta means the point of the needle. So now we're talking about a case of a needle. And either the eye of the needle, which is called harara, or the point of the needle, which is called ukta, was removed. Is it now mukta? Are you allowed to move it? Amale, so Rav Yosef responds to Nisua. We learned this in our Mishnah. The Mishnah says, Machat shal yad, litol boas hakotz, that you're allowed to move a needle in order to remove the splinter. What difference does it make whether the needle has an eye or it doesn't have an eye? Even if it doesn't have an eye, let's say you had a needle without an eye, you could still remove a coats. The question is, what happens if it doesn't have a point to it? Then you have to discuss whether or not it's possible to use such a needle without a point to remove a splinter. Esve Rava asks Akasha to Rav Yosef, we have a Mishnah in Kalim. The Mishnah says, with regard to Kabbalah's Tuma, Machat shenital chararo ukta, if you have a needle, and either the eye of the needle or the point of the needle was removed, then tahora. In other words, tahora means that it loses its status of being susceptible to Tuma, because it's no longer kli. A kli is mekabel tumah, but here it's not functional because it's missing a major critical part, either the eye or the point. And therefore it should be also betiltal if it's not a kli. We're allowed to move kalim utensils, but this doesn't have a shame kli. Omar Abai responds on behalf of Yosef, and he says, Tumah Shabbos Karamis. You're asking a question from Tumah to Shabbos, meaning from the laws of whether it's a kli to be mekabel Tumah, and by your analogy, you're comparing it to whether or not you'd be metaltel, whether it's a kli or not on Shabbos. There's no comparison. Why Tumah, kli maisa be'inon. The Torah says in the parsha of Tumah that it's got to be a kli maisa. Maisa means that it has to have the original function. You manufacture something, a kli, for a purpose, for a function, and it has to be functional. If it's broken, then it's not called a kli maisa, and therefore it's not makabel tumah. But in Shabbos, we have a much broader definition of a kli as far as tiltul Shabbos. Midi dechazi bina, we need something that could be functional. It doesn't have to have the original function for which it was created, but if it has any function, then it's called a kli as far as Shabbos is concerned. Vahanami, and this machat, this needle that's missing either its eye or its point, chazil mishkala bakotz, you can still use it to remove a splinter, so it has a function. I mean, Rabosai, if we were learning this be'iyun, this line in the Gemara would be one of the 13 tenets of the faith. I mean, he's really making a fundamental distinction here between tumah, where we need a kli maisa, and Shabbos, where all we need is some sort of function, and it remains a kli. Amar Rava, man dekamosiv, the one who asked the kasha on Rav Yosef, and he allowed moving machat on Shabbos, even if it's missing this point or that point. That is Rava Brei Derabba Shapir Kamosif. Rava says that the original question and the analogy is a perfectly good analogy. Why? To Le'inyan Tuma Lav Manahu Le'inyan Shabbos Nami Lav Manahu. Our criterion for a kli in order to allow tiltal on Shabbos is, would it be considered a kli as far as tuma? If the answer is yes, it's considered a kli, then you're allowed to be metaltal. If it's not a kli, as far as tuma is concerned, and it's not susceptible to tuma, then it's not a kli as far as Shabbos is concerned, you can't move it. And therefore the original kasha, with regard to the machat, that since this machat is missing a piece, therefore it's not makabel tuma, and ipso facto you're not allowed to move it on Shabbos, that's a perfectly good analogy, and the question is a good question. Meisvei, the members of the Beis Medrash asked the following question. We have a brisa that says, machat bein nekuva bein she'en nekuva mutal etaltal of a Shabbos. Here's an explicit statement against Rava that on Shabbos you can move a needle in order to take out a splinter, presumably, whether or not it has its eye or it doesn't have its eye. V'lo amru nekuva, and when do we require that it has an eye in order for it to be considered a kli? El linyan tumah bilvad. Only as far as tumah is concerned. He has a brisa that explicitly contradicts Rava, supports Abaye, that there's a fundamental distinction between the shame kli as far as Kabbalah's tumah and a shame kli as far as tiltul mukta is concerned. Tirgum Abaye aliva de Rava. I always suspect that when this happens, maybe because Abaye lived 20 years after Rava, so maybe Rava had already gone, I don't know, but Abaye now is going to interpret this brisa in order to defend Rava. Begolmei askinon. The brisa is talking about the raw materials, which means that we're in the process of manufacturing a needle. And it hasn't been fully manufactured. They arrested the process of manufacture somewhere in the middle. It was arrested. And they didn't get a chance to pierce the hole in the needle or to sharpen the point of the needle. The Torah says in Bamidbar Lamed Aleph that a kli that's makabel tuma has to be a kli maisa. Maisa means it has to be what's called nigmara malachto. It was completely manufactured. And it's ready to be used in its function. And therefore, in the case of Eina Nekuva, which means that they haven't yet punctured the hole in that needle, so the process of molacha, of preparing and manufacturing, has not been completed, it never had a shame kli, and it's not makabel tuma. Masha Ein Kain, however, as far as Shabbos is concerned, it's allowed for tiltal even if it isn't totally manufactured. It's still in a preparatory raw state. He may change his mind and decide, you know what? I'm going to use this needle for another purpose. I'm going to use it to take out splinters, and I don't need the eye of the needle. Aval hecha de nital chararo ukta. If, on the other hand, you had a fully manufactured needle, it was absolutely complete, and it had an eye, and it had a pin, a sharp end to it in the pin, and nital charara o uksa, and subsequently the eye was removed, or the pin was removed, then adam zarka lebein hagutra grut taos. He throws it amongst the broken utensils, he puts it basically in the rubbish bin, and he retires it. And therefore, it doesn't have a shame kli, and even as far as Shabbos is concerned, it's also a taltal. So that Rava would make the following distinction, says Abaye. With regard to a completely manufactured kli, if it doesn't have a shame kli because it broke subsequently, and it's not makabel tuma, then ipso facto, it's also a taltal of Shabbos. However, Rava would agree that there's a distinction between Tuma and Shabbos with regard to a utensil that was never completely manufactured. In Tuma Vitara, it's not Makabel Tuma, it doesn't have a Shem Kli, but as far as the head to Tiltul, if he decides he wants to use this needle without an eye to remove his splinter, then it's considered a Kli and it's Mutter betiltul. And now we're up to Asuve Yenuka, which is on the bottom here of Kufchav Gimel Amud Aleph. And what they used to do is very often after a baby was born, they would have to straighten out the limbs of the baby. They did a certain kind of a process, lahachlik biyad seder evroya tinok. So they would shake up in some special way. I guess you have to have a physician for this. Anyway, the question is, are you allowed to straighten out the limbs of a baby on Shabbos? Is Rav Nachman osir of Rav Sheshes Shari? So Rav Nachman prohibits it. Says Rav Nachman, "Oh, Rav Nachman, no, Amila, why do I say you're not allowed to do this thing on Shabbos?" And the answer is, it's called tikkun aguf. He is perfecting the body. Again, we're not talking about a dangerous situation. And this nan, we have a Mishnah later on at the end of Masechet Shabbos. Ein osin, and here we're going to look on Kuf Chav Gimel, Amud Beis, afik terizin b'Shabbos. Which means the following, that there's a certain kind of concoction that they would drink, and it would cause them to vomit, to regurgitate. And the Mishnah tells us that you're not allowed to drink this kind of concoction on Shabbos. And he's not doing it for refuah purposes. You know, sometimes, you know, you have something nebuch problematic in your intestines and you got to vomit it up. But here we're talking about this is what you call a Greek orgy. I don't know. You know, they would force themselves to vomit in order to eat more and more. And why is it asur? If it's not a refuah, it doesn't have any therapeutic purpose. And the answer is, says Rav Nachman, he believes that the reason it's asur is because it's called tikkun aguf. He is fixing up his body so that he can eat or drink. Now, based on this Mishnah, Rav Nachman comes to the conclusion that you're not allowed to be metaken and be mesader the evrei atinok, the limbs of the body of this infant, because that's tikkun aguf. And tikkun aguf is a melacha of either binyan or possibly makar v'patish. Rav Sheshes says, no, don't prove anything about an isur tikkun aguf. Hasam, there in the case of afik toizerin, lav urche. Aval hacha urche. He says the following, that there in the case of the forcing himself to regurgitate, then lav urchi, that's not called a normal way of tikkun aguf, and therefore it's us. We're not going to allow you to do something unusual in order to improve your guf. But in a case of sidur evrei atinok urchehu, that's the normal way he does it, and that's like feeding a baby. And that's not called tikkun aguf. That's all within the normal process of feeding the baby. But what's my source that you're allowed to be mesader every atinok on Shabbos? This nan, we have a Mishnah. And this Mishnah we learned a little bit earlier. Machet shel yad lito bas hakotz. We're allowed to take a needle in order to remove a splinter. So you see that the Chachamim did not prohibit tikkun aguf. He's improving his body. If there's no refuah, if it's not an act of therapy. And therefore, sidur evrei atinok, which is called tikkun aguf, that's also permitted if he does it in a normal, reasonable way. And Rav Nachman, he's going to respond, and he's going to say that there's no proof from the case of removing a splinter. Hasam, pakid, hacha, lo pakid. What it means is the following, that in the case of a splinter, the splinter is separate from the body. That's called pocket. Pocket means it's outside of the system of the body. And therefore, when he digs into his body to remove this splinter, that's not considered tikkun aguf. He's just removing something that's on the body, but he's not changing the body. But hocha, here in the case of sidur evrei tinok, low pocket, it's not something that he's separating from the body. All these organs and limbs that he's trying to improve are part of the body itself. And that's called tikkun aguf. And that's also because that's similar to a malacha of binyan, etc. And now we're up to the Mishnah on the top of Kuf Chaf Gimel Amid Beitz. Kona Shel Zesim, a reed which has a hollow part to it. In English it's called a cane, C-A-N-E, and it's used for turning over olives. That's why it's called a Kona Shel Zesim. And the Mishnah now wants to contrast the laws of Tumah with the laws of Tiltil on Shabbos. It says the following: as far as Tumah is concerned, it all depends. Im yesh kesher berosho mekabel Tumah. If it has a knot at its head, so that now it becomes a receptacle, so when the oil goes in, the olive oil goes into this reed, this hollow reed, it's tied up at the bottom, and therefore this is a full-fledged, what's called kli kibul, a receptacle, and it holds on to the oil, then it's mekabel tumah. It's susceptible to tumah. Im lav, if it hasn't been tied up, it's just an open reed. So it may have functions to it, as we'll soon see, but it's not mekabel tumah. And that's because you need to have some sort of a kli kibul. It's got to be able to hold on to the oil. And if it's open on both ends, then it will not receive the oil. However, says the Mishnah, conscious that as far as Shabbos is concerned, ben kachu ben kan nital b'Shabbos. Even if he doesn't tie it up at one end, he doesn't plug it up, and it's an open hollow reed from both sides, nevertheless you're allowed to be metaltlin on Shabbos, because it has a function. Now, this reed has its real optimum function is to collect some of the oil. When the grapes were taken after the harvest and they were piled one on top of the other, they began to crush and the oil would come out. Now the question was whether these olives are ready, they're ripe enough to crush them and remove their oil. So they needed to do a test case. They would take a reed and the reed would hold on to a little bit of the oil, and the experts would know whether that oil is already from a developed olive and it's perfect oil or not, and whether or not it's time for crushing the olives. However, there's also another function to this reed, to move around the olives. And that's why in Shabbos, it's not muktzah. But first let's talk for a minute about tumah. The Gemara asks Amai, why does the Mishnah rule that im yesh kesher berosho mekabel tumah? Now we have to keep in mind that a reed, R-E-E-D, grows in the ground, and it has the same status as wood. It is wood. And the Torah in the Parsha of Tumah V'Tara says the following, that Pshute Kli Eitz Einom Mekabel Tumah. If you have a flat wooden utensil, it doesn't receive Tumah. Because in the Parsha of Tumah, it's mentioned sack. Sack is a sackcloth which has a kli kibul to it. The opposite of a kli kibul, of a receptacle, is pshute kli eitz. It has no receptacle. And that's not mekabel tumah. My taima, why isn't it mekabel tumah? Dumya de sak be'ina. The Torah says in the parsha of Tumas Kalim that it has to be like a sack. Sack, as we said before, has a receptacle. So why then is this cane susceptible to tumah? And the answer is Tana Mishmei de Rav Nechemia B'shosh Emahapik Pezesim Hofcho V'roebo. When he turns over the olives inside this cane, some of the oil, if it's locked, if it's plugged up at one end, will accumulate in this cane, and therefore it is a receptacle. In the case of Shabbos is concerned, as far as Muktzah, we don't care whether it's a receptacle or not. That condition of Dumya Desak doesn't apply to Shabbos. In Shabbos, we just have to know whether or not this is a utensil and it has some function. And it could be a function of turning over the zasim so you can get more of a view of the zasim and you can examine them. But even though it's not a receptacle, it wouldn't be makabel tumah, but nevertheless, it has a shem kli, and there's a het to tiltul on Shabbos. And this leads us to the second Mishnah on Kuf Chav Gimel Amid Beis. The Mishnah records the opinion of Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yossi omer kol hakelim nitolim chutz min hamaser hagadol v'yesed shel machresha. All utensils are mutar on Shabbos, with the exception of a meser agodol. Meser agodol is like a saw, or a yosei chomach resha, right? What's it called when you do harisha, when you plow the ground? Anyway, we'll call it a plow for now. The front part of a plow has teeth to it, very sharp teeth. And in these two cases of two very specialized kalim, the large saw that's used normally to cut wood for beams, or in the case of in English it's called a coulter, C-O-L-T-E-R, which is the top part of the plow that is like a knife, it cuts into the ground, it makes furrows in the ground. So these might be ruined. You remember we discussed this earlier, that if you're makpin on it, you're very careful, that it shouldn't be used for any other purpose, then it's muktzah. And he would miyachid la makom, he would lock it up in a certain place so that no one would get access to it. But Rabbi Yossi says, and every other utensil, you're allowed to move. These two utensils are very special. They come under the category called muktzah machmas chisar and kis, which means they're muktzah because they're very expensive and he doesn't want to get them ruined, and he's very mak, but he puts it away, he locks it up, as we said before. Omer Rav Nachman, hai uchla de katzare ki yoseid shel machresha damya. So Rav Nechemia wants to add and expand the list of kalim that are muktzah machmas chisar and kis, because they're very expensive and he locks them up. And he adds to them the launderers. Well, what they would do is, you may have seen this in your youth, if you remember, they had these flat pans that had holes in it. And they would pour the water in such a way that now they could move the water over the garment in the process of cleaning, of laundering. And once again, according to Rav Nachman, we're dealing with a copper perforated vessel that the launderer would use. And once again, we have to assume that they were very particular that this utensil should not be used for any other purpose. They locked it up. And it's called Muktzah Machmas Chisaron Kis. Okay. Now, Omer Abaye wants to add another bunch of kalim. He's got Charba di Ushpache, which is the knife that's used for a tanner. You may remember again from your youth, the old barbershops, they used to have this strip of hide, and they used to use it to sharpen their knives. The Sakina di Ashkevta, which is a butcher's knife. Again, it's got to be a very sharp knife, without any what we call pegimos in it, no nicks. I don't know why he doesn't mention a sakin shel shechita would also fit into this category. V'chatzina de nagri. Okay, this is a kli which is used by a nagar. Nagar is a carpenter. And once again, we're adding to this list other kinds of kalim. He calls it a garzen shel negarim, some sort of an axe that's used by carpenters. Ki yosei shomach reishitom. It has the same status, says Abai, as the two kalim that are mentioned by Rabbi Yossi, and you're not allowed to be metal to them because, again, they may get ruined, they may get nicks, and the owner is makzel some v'yadayim. He deliberately locks them up that no one should use them on Shabbos. Tor Rabbanon. Okay, now, Rabosai, what we're entering in is the most famous sugya in this chapter, which gives us the historical background of the Isser of Tiltul Kalim, how it developed over the course of time. Tana Rabbanan v'Rishona, we're going back to the time of Bayis Sheni, when Ezra Nehemiah came on Aliyah with, I don't know, 42,000 Jews, you know, to resettle the land. And Nehemiah, who authored a book called Sefer Nehemiah, Kishmo, he says that at his point in time, people were not careful about observing Shabbos, and the Rabbanan made a very strict Isur, and they said, you're not allowed to be metaltel kalim, for you omrim shlosha kalim nitolim b'Shabbos, and except for, we're not talking about kalim that he uses to eat with, you know, a spoon, a knife, a fork, a bowl, a plate, those are all mutter, otherwise he can't eat on Shabbos. But beyond those, there are only three kalim that he's going to allow tiltel in the original gzera of Nehemiah. And those are a mektsoa shel dvela. Okay, it's a certain kind of a small knife that was used to cut dried figs. And zuama listerin shel kedera. They had a certain spoon that they would use to take off the, you know, that part of the soup or whatever it was that rose to the top. You know, that you had to get rid of those pieces. And that's called zuama. And let me just see how he translates it into English. He calls it, just one second. Where is it? Sorry, I lost it. All right, anyway, we'll find it as we go along. He says, a ladle used for skimming foam off the top of a cooking pot, right? Foam, he calls it, F-O-A-M. Then we have a sakin ktana shal gabi ashulchan, a small table knife. And again, I don't know exactly why he has to mention this, but anyway, probably the table knife is indicative of a category of all those kalim, those small utensils that he needs to eat with, and they're on the table. Then, later on, the people started observing Shabbos, and slowly but surely, they loosened the belt and allowed more and more kalim to be moved on Shabbos. Itiru v'chazur, itiru v'chazur, itiru. Notice that there are three different levels here. There's one heter, a second heter, and a third heter. So the original Isur was all-encompassing, no movement of utensils, with the exception of those few utensils that are singled out. And now, three additional stages of heter. Acha Amru, until they finally said, after all these three stages of heter, kol hakelim nitol v'shabbos chutz min ha-meser agol v'yoseh tshel machresha. And they allowed you to move all kelim, with the exception of a large saw and a coulter, which, as we discussed before, that's a mukta machmas chisar and kiss situation. Ma'u hitiru v'chazu v'tiru v'chazu v'tiru. What are these three stages in which they expanded the heter, the permission to move kalim? And on this, we're going to have machlokas between Abaye and Rav. Omar Abaye, first, he tiru davar shemalachta leheter litzorach gufo. They allowed you to use any kind of a kli that was designated for a permission, for a permitted work on Shabbos. In other words, it wasn't a malach on Shabbos, as long as you're using it for that purpose. Like we gave an example before, those reeds that they used to move around the olives. Then, stage number two. Chazru v'tiru davar shemalachta leheter litzorach makomo. If you have a kli and it's taking up space and you need to vacate that space, as long as it's a kli that's designated for a heter, you're allowed to move it, not for the purpose of the kli itself, but for the purpose of vacating the space that you need. So let's say, for example, after you eat your lunch on Shabbos, and you want to clear off the table so you'll be able to use that table for Shal Shudis, you'd be allowed to move all those kelim in the second level of a heter because the Kli Shemlach Tel Heter L'Tzorech Mekoma. Then we get to the third level. Chazu V'Tivu Dorosh Shemlach Tel Isur L'Tzorech Gufo. They allowed you to move a utensil that's designated for a Malacha Asura, but only L'Tzorech Gufo. Only if you need it to function in and of itself. L'tzorach gufo in, l'tzorach makom lo. They would not allow you to take a kli shemlach tel isur and move it in order to vacate its spot. So imagine you have a carpenter's hammer that's on your table and you want to set the table. According to Abaye, you're not allowed to move that hammer to vacate the table, because the Kli Shemlach Tel Isur, which is only Mutal Itzor Gufo, so you can take the hammer and crack your nuts with it, but you can't take your hammer in order to empty the space. Vadayin biyodo achos in b'shtei yodov lo. If you have a lightweight Kli that can be picked up with one hand, that's okay. But if it's a heavy Kli and you need two hands to pick it up, that would be prohibited. Acha Omru, and now we get to stage number four, which is Kol HaKelim Nitolim B'Shabbos HaFilu B'Shtei Yodayim. Says Abai, the Kol HaKelim is coming, L'Rabuye, it's coming to include even a heavy Kli that you need two hands to lift it up. Amalei Rava, Michti Hitiru K'tani. The Brisa says that after the initial prohibition, they permitted taking Kelim. Is Malu Litzorch Gufo, Malu Litzorch Makomo. Once they came up with that first heter, according to Rav, includes both Litzorch Gufo and Litzorch Makomo. And therefore, your system, Abaye, 1, 2, 3, makes no sense. Elama Rava, no. This is how you have to interpret the threefold system. Hitiru Dovashem Lato Leheter, Bein Litzorch Gufo, Bein Litzorch Makomo. They allowed you to move a kli whose purpose is something for a function that you're allowed to do on Shabbos, and you could move it both to use the kli itself or to vacate the spot that it's occupying. That's round one. Now we're up to Hakofa Beis. Chazu v'tiru mechama l'tzel. What happens if you have a utensil, a kli shemlach tel heter, it's out in the sun? You're not going to use it, and you don't need the space that it's occupying. But you want to take it into the shade because it's going to get ruined by the sun. That was the next stage, the next level of heter. Now we're up to the third level. Chazu v'tiru davish hamalach tel isur, litzorch gufo ulitzorch makomo. When it comes to a kli shemalach tel isur, on the third round, they were matir moving that kli, because again, Rav always equates litzorch gufo litzorch makomo, whether you're moving it in order to use it for a permitted use, or you're moving it in order to vacate the spot that it occupies, so you have the hammer on the table, and you need the table, you're allowed to move the hammer simply because you have to vacate the table. However, michabal itzel, if let's say you have a hammer, and it's out in the sun, and you want to move it into the shade because otherwise it might get ruined by the heat of the sun, that you're not allowed to do, is michamel itzel lo. Vadayin, no, at this point already he agrees with Abaye in the finale. Vadayin bottom echad in b'shnei b'dei odom lo. What happens if you have such a heavy keli that you need two people to carry it? Acha omru, that was the fourth stage, when they included kol ha-keli nitolim b'shabbos afilu b'shnei b'dei odom, even a heavy keli that requires two people to move it. Eisvei Abaye, Abaye Eskakash on Rava, Medocha, the Brisa says that if you have this garlic crushing machine, Im Yesh Boshum Metaltana, so if there's still garlic in it, you're allowed to move it. Im Lav Ein Metaltal, and you're not allowed to move it. Wait a second. According to you, Rava, we should be allowed to move it, Litzorach Gufo. It's a classic kli shemalach tel isur, and now I want to use it, Litzorach Gufo. I want to use it as a paperweight. Hachamayas Kinan says, Rava, mechamel itzel. You're not allowed to move this mortar in order to protect it from the heat of the sun. And that's Asur in a case of a Klishim Latali Isur, even according to Rava. Esve, Abai asks another Kashan Rava, Vishavin, the Brisa says that both Beisil and Beishami agree, Shem Kitzev Olav Basar Shasul Taltalo. Remember that we had this Eli, which was a kind of a Kli that was used to crush the grains, and now he wants to use it as a platform for his meat. And they both, by Silvei Chame, prohibit it if he's already cut up his meat. And once he's chopped up his meat, he's covered himself as far as Simchas Yontov is concerned. There's no longer a heter. Why? Call it a Klishim Latali, sir, but you're allowed to move it Litzar Gufo, according to you, Rava, Litzar Gufo, Litzar Makomo. Hachanami, again, Rav is going to give the same answer, Mechamal Itzel, that if he wants to move this Eli in order to protect it from the sun, he's not allowed to do so because it's a Klishim Latali, sir. Omar Rabbi Chanina, Bimei Nechemya ben Chachalya Nishneis Mishneh Zu. This Mishneh that we learned is referring to those days of Nechemya ben Achal Teksiv, Bayomim Hahema Ra'isi Bihuda, Darchim Gitos Beshabes Umevim Haremos. Nehemiah testifies that during his period of time, he saw people in Judah, they were pressing wine vats, which is a malach on Shabbos, they were bringing heaps from the fields, which is a malach of Ma'amer, and the situation was very dire. And the response of the Chachamim, enacting very harsh takonos, in order to get the Jewish people back on track. On Rabbi Lazar, Kanin, Umaklos, Glostera, Umidocha, Kulam Kodem Hataras Kalim Mishnah. All these specific kinds of Kalim, whether tubes, staffs, a knob, a mortar, all those were taught before the Heter, and therefore they're Asur. But after the Heter, we're allowed to move them. Again, Litzark Gufa, Litzark Makomo, according to Abaye and according to Rava, Markedisli Kanin. As far as tubes are concerned, that was the first on the list of four. Disnan, because you have Mishnah Masechta Menachos, this has to do with what's called Sidur Shtei Alechem. Lo Sidur Akonim V'lo Netilosam Docha Es HaShabbos. Right, when they had to, at the end of the week, they had to replace the older last week's Lechem Aponim with the new batch of fresh Lechem Aponim. Then, in the Beis HaMikdash, they would not allow removing these kinds of tubes on Shabbos, and that's because it is considered a kli shemalachto leisur. I have a whole diagram here in the translation. He's got a picture of these kinds of parts of the shulchan, and one of them is called kanin. Okay. So he has the following. We've got Konim, okay? And then we have Maklos. Remember, Rabbi Lozer mentioned Maklos, some sort of a staff. Disnan, again, he quotes a Mishnah, and this Mishnah is in Masechet Pesachim with regard to Korban Pesach. It says, Maklos dakim chalokim hayusham. They had thin, smooth staffs in the Beis HaMikdash. Umediach al ksefo val kesef chaver. So when they wanted to carry out the lamb after the shechita for the purpose of Korban Pesach, they would put this makel, this kind of a staff, on the shoulder of one person, on the shoulder of the other person, and the lamb was carried on this makel between the two of them. Vitole umafshit, he suspends the Korban Pesach, and then he does the hafshot. If you remember, he takes off the skin. And Rabbi Lozer, Omer, Arbasa Shechalios B'Shabbos, if Erev Pesach, the 14th, which is the time for the Korban Pesach, overrides with Shabbos, then Meiniach, here we are on Kuf Chav Dal and Amanalf, Meiniach Yodu Al Kosef Chavero, V'Yad Chavero Al Ksefo V'Solo Umafshit. He's not allowed to carry with these staffs, because that's already also on Shabbos, and now Erev Pesach is on Shabbos. What he has to do is, he has to carry it out in a different kind of a way, that one person puts his arm on the shoulder of the next person, and the Korban Pesach is suspended by their arms. So we're up to now Glustera, okay? And Glustera is going to be the subject of a Mishnah in Kalim, which Amir Tzashem B'li Neder will cover tomorrow. And we're on Daf Kufchav Dalid Amid Aleph.